listening to ThePorchDrinking.com's The Porchcast podcast, brought to you by First Draft Taproom and Kitchen, located in the heart of Denver's Rhino Art District at 1309 26th Street, featuring a pour-your-own draft system with over 40 incredible beers to sample from. And OnTap Credit Union, crafting individual financial solutions for people who brew great beer, the breweries that produce great beer, and the communities where they all reside and do business. The Porchcast is also supported by Latitude Financial Group, which provides financial planning and investment strategies so you can start saving money and begin lowering taxes. And finally, Made by Chalk, who can help with all of your brewery branding, logo design, and website design needs. And now, The Porchcast.
All right, everyone, and welcome to episode 40 of The Porchcast. We are broadcasting from Alamo Draft House out here at Sloan's Lake. Their Sloan's Lake location, which is their second here in Denver. We are excited to be broadcasting from Barfly, which is their bar inside of Alamo Draft House, and we'll have some of the Alamo team on here in a minute. We've got a monster show, and it's been a little bit of a while since we last broadcasted from Blue Moon, but I'm excited to have Dev Adams, aka Miss Lupulin, as our guest today. Thanks for joining us, Dev. How's it going?
Thanks for having me. Yeah. Pretty good. I've got a beer in my hand, so yeah. Can't be better, really.
And we are on the verge of entering September here, which means it is prime prep time for JBF, right?
It is that. It is that. Everyone's scrambling to get their entries packaged out to the warehouse, you know?
Yeah, that's super exciting. And we'll definitely dive more into JBF here in a bit, but also want to welcome Jesse, our co-host, Jesse Brookstein. How's it going, brother?
Really well. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah.
Every time I get the email, I'm like, yay, I'm still on board.
Haven't been fired yet.
Not yet.
Samuel, our producer, how's it going, man?
Good, good, good.
How are we doing on the levels?
Levels are solid.
Sam follows me around and just checks my levels wherever I go.
Just always mic checking, Tristan.
In everyday life. Yeah. When I get heated, he's like, bring it down a little bit.
It's a little pitchy.
After a while at a beer share, the volume just kind of goes out the window. Flag him down a little bit.
Yeah. And a little bit softer now.
Yeah, exactly.
I know the last couple of beer shares that Tristan was at, he's a little flat.
Yeah. Oh, man. Wow. That's
good old flat Tristan.
This is how this one's going to go, huh?
Yeah, Ryan Hannigan. Thanks so much, brother. I really appreciate that. We have a lot of topics to get to for today's show. It's been, just a few weeks, but even in that short amount of time, we've had a lot that's happened. New Belgium has acquired Magnolia Brewing, Constellation acquired Funky Buddha. We'll get to those in just a minute. But the big news that came out this past weekend was the release of the GABF brewery list. We now know approximately the field for who will be attending GABF this year. Dev, taking a look at this list, who are you most excited about trying?
Well, we've got the Returner Two Roads Brewing, fantastic brewery out of Connecticut. So good. My heart is in North Carolina. My folks live in Asheville. So I'm really excited to see Highwire out here. They're a really underrated brewery from Asheville. A lot of people haven't heard of them. Super stoked to see them. Nantahala out of Bryson City. They just opened a brew pub recently. Excited to have those guys out to see us. Actually did a collaboration with them for Collaboration Fest.
Oh, cool.
This past year we did Brown IPA. That was super fun. And then the Bold Missy Brewery out of Charlotte. Haven't tried them yet. Heard really good buzz. They focus on what they say are bold missies and misters, and kind of have a real positive vibe about them, brewing beer for everybody. I like it.
Sweet. Nice. Jesse, I know you might have had a little bit of a chance to take a look at the list. Any standout names just offhand?
Maybe it's like so hipster of me, but when I go to the GABF, I really just like going to places I've never heard of. And trying to find beers that maybe just fly under the radar that I really enjoy. Like a Vienna lager that might just blow my mind, or a Dortmunder or something like that. So, to be honest, there's nothing. I guess I was saddened to see New Glarus wasn't going to be here.
Yeah.
Because as you, maybe just the last two beer styles I named off, I really like those easy drinking, clean lagers and such. But yeah, I don't know. I oftentimes like to separate myself from my... Well, it's usually I get lost, I think, within the first 2 minutes of going in with people. And I just find something really special about just walking around the floor and not knowing or talking to anybody and just drinking beers I've never tried before.
So. My goal for GABF this year is just to follow you around and bring everyone that you know to just bombard you and talk to you the entire time.
I'm going to bring fake mustache sunglasses.
Sam, what about you? Anything on the list that jumps off at you?
I always look for some of the breweries from back home in Michigan, since most of them don't make it out here. So I was pretty stoked that Dark Horse is going to be there. I feel like Founders hasn't been there a few years prior. It's been 2 years since I've been, so maybe they came back since then, but they're going to be there, so I'm happy about that always. Yeah, and I guess I was disappointed. Yeah, New Glarus is one that I've still never really tried when I've been at the festival because the line's usually around the whole hall, basically. So.
Absolutely.
But I tend to be more like Jesse in that I like to wander around, get lost, and then find some like short line breweries and just go up there and try what they have and see, right. You know, see if you can find like a little hidden gem that way.
I used to love posting up at all the Port Brewing Company locations mm-hmm. too, and there was like 700 of them, mm-hmm. and just trying like all their iterations of this IPA, like all the coffee 8% breakfast stouts that they always had. So that was always a ton of fun for sure.
I always like getting the app and looking up all the different styles and kind of spending one night just hitting a certain style. Like, I'm with you. I love cream ales. I think cream ales are the thing right now. And to go hit up all the funky, weird cream ales that people are doing, kind of start the night off real light, and then, you know, I end up wandering back to things I'm familiar with by the time my palate's roasted.
Right.
Totally. For me, some of my favorites, or some of my, you know, the ones that I'm looking forward to the most, Speciation Artisan Ales out of Michigan. Mitch Ermatinger and his wife, I think Whitney, they both come from Colorado. They actually brewed with Black Project for a while, and now they started their own kind of blendery out in Grand Rapids. The stuff that I've had from them has just been out of this world.
Did you hear the story about how they got a booth?
Yeah, actually, I did. You want to fill everybody in on that?
Yeah,
okay,
essentially.
Okay for the airwaves?
Lots of bribing at the BA.
Nothing terribly seedy, you know?
Mitch stripped down to his skivvies and put on it. No. Tell us about the story.
So basically, they didn't get a booth. They didn't win the lotto to get a booth, and were crushed about it. They wanted to come back to Colorado. They really wanted to showcase their beers. They want all their friends out here to try their beers. And there was another brewery out there who said, you know what, this is a big deal for you. This is more important to you. And they gave up their spot.
Yeah, it was another Michigan brewery,
yep.
Right?
Yeah. And that really cool. is what That's this industry is about right there.
Absolutely.
Pretty rad.
Yeah, with awesome. Over 800 breweries attending this year, it's gotten a lot stiffer competition to get into the festival. And so many breweries that, you know, in past years have tried often maybe didn't get in this time. And so a really cool story that... for Mitch and the Speciation family, that they were able to you know, utilize some of the goodwill from the industry and be able to come showcase their stuff for the first time. So
is Scratch coming?
Scratch will be back this year. I'm right. really stoked about those guys. Awesome. They do such creative stuff with foraged ingredients.
Yep.
Last year they went with an all mushroom beers totally. For their theme. Really excited to see what they bring this year. I know in the past they did some with kind of boiled rocks in their beer, so that was kind of weird and crazy and mind-blowing.
A bunch of Stein beers.
Yeah, exactly.
Forbidden Root does something along this line, all botanical beers. That's Randy Mosier's joint in Chicago,
right.
his new place.
Yeah.
They're really interesting. They'll be back this year.
Cool. Awesome. I'm also really stoked about Three Floyds and Toppling Goliath. Those are some familiar names for beer geeks, but... you know, Toppling Goliath in particular, it's a little bit harder to find out here. What they do with the Pseudo Sue series is pretty impressive from a hop profile. You know, we also have some... I recently visited Boomtown Brewery in L.A., and they were actually very impressive. They do a lot of core styles really, really well, and I'm really stoked to see them. Captain Lawrence is one that's going to be back this year that wasn't there last year. Cascade as well, Council Brewing. And last year, my two kind of biggest or most impressive breweries were Beechwood Barbecue and Blendery, and also Modern Times, which both of those will be back this year. So I'm really stoked. I think their styles are very similar in that they are really pushing the boundaries on sours and wilds, but they also do some big boozy barrel aged stuff that translates really well as well.
Fun fact, the first female advanced Cicerone is Morgan from Modern Times.
Oh, no way. Well, I think that's a perfect kind of segue. Dev, we kind of intro'd you a little bit, but I want to tell our listeners a little bit more about you. Now, you mentioned advanced Cicerone. You are the second advanced Cicerone
mm-hmm.
To pass that level. Can you first tell us a little bit about the Cicerone training program, certification program, and also let's get into a little bit more about what it takes to become an advanced Cicerone.
So the Cicerone certification program, it's a professional certification. You can think of it along the same lines as if you got, say, your PMP for project management, or people have even equated it to the bar exam. It's a professional certification. It's an extensive testing program to make sure that you really do know beer, and not just how to brew or like history of beer, but you also know the styles, you know how beer and food pairing, you know off flavors. You're really well-rounded when it comes to beer, even draft line maintenance, all of that. So there are four levels to the Cicerone program. So you have your certified beer server, which is the first level. It's an online exam. I recommend it for anybody working in a bar or brewery. It's just a good baseline. It's really a base of, yeah, I know my basic beer styles. I know my basic food and beer pairings. I kind of know brewing a little bit. I at least know what a mash tun is, that sort of thing. Second level, certified Cicerone. It's a four-hour long test. It includes essays and multiple choice and short answer and tastings. And you have to do something with keeping and serving beer. It's a live demonstration. I can't tell you what. It's part of the gig. and then Advanced Cicerone's a full-day test. It's eight essays. It's over 300 multiple-choice questions. Two one-on-ones with experts in the field. For me, that was Ray Daniels, who's the head of the Cicerone program, and Pat Fahey, who's the youngest master Cicerone. Not at all intimidating, especially not when you have the worst head cold you've ever had in your entire life.
Oh my gosh.
And then extensive tasting panel, and it covers everything from, you know, cellaring beer and beer styles, and you really do, you have to know the BJCP, which is the style guidelines, all 163 beer styles in and out, upside down. Master Cicerone is even another level. It's a two-day test. It's all essay, in-person, panel discussions, serving beer. It's designed to be as strenuous as the sommelier, the master sommelier exam. This is meant to have the same prestige, the same repute, the same rigorous testing, so that when you say you're a Cicerone, that says you really do know your stuff.
Yeah. Now, I believe you mentioned earlier that there were only 28 advanced Cicerones, correct?
I was the 28th. There are now 49 in the world.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. So it is, you know, still very, just a slight handful that have hit that third level, correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
That's impressive. And then do you happen to know how many master Cicerones there are?
There are 13.
13, okay. Now, what kind of training goes into, you know, you talk about the beer server level is something that most people who have studied basic levels of beer, understanding styles and whatnot, but then getting to that advanced level, what does it take to really train for that?
Believe it or not, a lot of drinking beer. For me, it was reading some pretty key texts, Randy Mosier's Tasting Beer, Garrett Oliver's The Brewmaster's Table, a lot of things by Stan Hieronymus. The whole brewing ingredients series from the Brewers Association was huge for me, especially malt and water. Those played huge roles for me. Anything I could read about beer, I was reading. I was listening to podcasts to and from work. Anything from Beersmith was huge, again, because Brad Smith is interviewing people who know what they're talking about, so I knew I was getting really quality information. We would go out, so my boyfriend Josh, he's the head brewer at Golden City, he would go out and he'd buy a bunch of beers, a bunch of singles, and completely blind tastings. You know, what is this beer? Is there anything wrong with it? You know, quizzing me and all those things. I run off-flavor tasting courses for people, sure. So when we were done with those courses, Josh would help me pour a off-flavor tasting for myself, and so I'd quiz myself that way. Going down to breweries that I trusted to have really solid beer styles and saying, you know, pour me a bunch of beers, similar colors, and I will tell you what they are. And I was terrible at it for so long.
Really?
And so I learned so much, because I'd be like, oh yeah, you know, this is your IPA, and this is your pale ale, and this is your blonde. They're like, none of the above. Sweet, I'm really good at this. And it's just honing your palate, challenging your palate, challenging yourself, going to beer fests and not getting smashed, because I'm so concentrating on making sure I am trying all these different styles. Going through the BJCP and really knowing each of the beers listed, the top three beers listed as commercial examples, and knowing those to a T.
That's so incredible. So would you say that you're to a point where you could walk into a brewery and kind of know exactly what you're tasting without any kind of context clues or anything like that? Is that kind of the intensity that you have to get to? Or
I think that's the master level. I think I'm getting there.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. I'm still, every day is a learning experience.
Sure.
I'm still training myself. I can definitely tell you the difference between a blonde, a pale, and an IPA. We're finally at that stage, so that's good.
Well, yeah.
But it really depends on the brewery. It depends on how close to style they are. I can definitely tell you, if you hand me a beer and say, this is a Schwartz beer, I can tell if it's to style or not.
Sure.
I can talk about beer styles all day and night. I can trace down problems with a beer. I actually got a call from a friend of ours who's a brewer, and he was having an issue, and I was out of town. I'm like, okay, what are you tasting? And he starts running it down. I could tell him exactly what the problem was. I was like, you know, it's your yeast. You've got kind of an older yeast going on. I was able to help him work through it and help him save his beer.
That's incredible.
So
wow,
it was awesome.
Impressive. So I'm sure you get this question all the time, but are you now training to become a master?
Not officially or anything. I think it's just every day I like to learn, and you know, maybe I'll get to the point that I'm like, you know what, I think I might be able to do this. Or massive head injury, and I decided to do it because oh man, that advanced test was brutal. At the end of it, you're just so exhausted. You don't want to talk to anybody. You don't want to think. You just want to go and sleep for several days. And I can't imagine the stress of the master being 2 days and having that day between where you can agonize over every little misstep you think you made.
Sure.
And then you have to do it all over again. Ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh. No.
You sound like Joe Biden, not willing to commit to running in 2020. No, that's really impressive, Dev. And it's so cool to see, you know, all the training that goes into something that most people consider a hobby, but you know, there's so much that's involved in brewing and beer and so much to learn all the time. You know, I honestly haven't even taken the basic beer server level, and I'm really
I know
it's something that I've been wanting to sit down and buckle down on, but yeah, hopefully I'll get there someday.
It's good. It's fun to have. It's nice to have there and be like, hey, look, I know things.
Yeah. Well, what do you recommend for people who are just trying to start their journey along the Cicerone certification program? What's the biggest way that they can kind of dive into it head on?
Read Tasting Beer by Randy Mosier.
Yeah.
Definitely the definitive text.
Absolutely.
So that'd be step one. And preferably read it at your favorite brewery, and then read it at a brewery you're not a huge fan of, and read it at a brewery where you're not sure about the styles, and read it at a brewery where the styles are really solid. Cool. So, you know, just continue to educate yourself. I think getting the BJCP, Beer Judge Certification Program, is crucial. Mm-hmm. I did that prior to taking my advanced Cicerone exam, and it made it a world of difference. So.
Awesome. Now, this is Dev Adams on the show with us. She is an advanced Cicerone. She's also a certified BJCP judge. She's a writer, the senior writer for Colorado Brewery List, and also runs her own website, Miss Lupulin. She's going to stay on with us for the rest of the show, but we're going to take a quick break. After the break, we're going to have members of Alamo Draft House's staff joining us, tell us a little bit about this new beautiful location that we're in, and also some of the great programming that's coming up here at Alamo Draft House Sloan's Lake, here at the Barfly, located within the Alamo Draft House. Hang tight, this is The Porchcast. Tristan, Jesse, Sam, and Dev will be back in just a moment. Hang tight. While many of you out there are stowing away bottles of bourbon barrel-aged stouts, lambics, and other wilds, it's equally important to stow some money away for a rainy day. Saving money and paying off debts are two of the biggest New Year's resolutions for 2017, so do it the smart way. Go to latitudefinancial.com. Start saving money and lowering your taxes today. Go to latitudefinancialgroup.com to schedule a complimentary meeting now. Once again, that's latitudefinancialgroup.com. Made by Chalk specializes in creating brand experiences for the craft brewing industry, including here at Alamo Draft House. They actually did the website for Alamo Draft House's Barfly and Littleton locations. From product packaging to websites, apps, and events, Chalk services are tailored for independently owned craft breweries, maltsters, and industry-related consumer products. If you're looking for premium branding for your brewery or a new concept for your web design needs, visit madebychalk.com. Once again, that's madebychalk.com. All right, we're back with episode 40 of The Porchcast. We are once again broadcasting live from Alamo Draft House, Sloan's Lake, here in Denver, Colorado. For this segment, we're joined by Stephen Bissett, creative director here at Barfly, and Brittany Matheny, also Barfly manager and creative coordinator. How's it going, guys?
Good, how are you doing?
Great, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Appreciate it.
It's a creative bunch we're amongst here.
So much creativity.
I know, I like it.
No, we're one of the reasons we're broadcasting from Alamo Draft House is A, because they're a tremendous sponsor of PorchDrinking.com, but also because they have a tremendous draft list. You guys have curated such a really eclectic and representative draft list of you know, the great beer that's here in Colorado, and also just great beer within the craft industry as a whole. Why is that important to you guys? And also, we'll get into a little bit more about the culture here at Alamo Draft House here in a bit. But tell us about the beer.
I mean, honestly, we're really fortunate. One of Alamo's like core values is to keep everything as local as possible. And like I was saying, we're just really fortunate here in Denver that we have so many great beer options. There's not really any reason to go outside of Colorado.
Sure.
So.
Yeah. And one of the things that I love about Alamo, for those who aren't familiar, Alamo Draft House originated in Austin, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And now they have two locations out here in Colorado, one out in Littleton and also here now in Denver, Sloan's Lake. And it's probably the best movie-going experience you'll ever come across. I mean, really, you know, cozy and intimate viewing experiences. They're really hilarious in some of their intros of saying, like, silence your phones. It's all about the movie experience. You don't want to disrupt that experience for other moviegoers. But also, you have the ability to order really great food. And
popcorn with real butter, people.
Oh, wow. Yeah, absolutely. So you can order all of that from your cozy seat, and then also, you know, like we mentioned, the great beer. So tell us about how Alamo elevates that experience. We touched a little bit about that just now, but to you guys, and you all have been living it and breathing it for so long, how does Alamo really cement that movie-going experience?
Well, I mean, I think it's, you know, you pretty much laid the foundation for that there. I mean, it really lies in preserving the kind of filmic experience of, you know, we're very adamant about no talking, no texting. You know, we'll kick you out if you keep doing it. So we have a foundation of, like, these rules that are, like, you can't do this. You can't do this or else, you know, we're going to, you know, extricate you.
Yeah.
You know, which some people think is a joke, but we've kicked out plenty of people, and so we're serious about it. So, yeah, we've kind of created it as like a kind of a church kind of sacred space.
Sure.
You know, in addition to that, you know, that's, you know, special programming, you know, of classics and repertory titles, in addition to making cool experiences for, you know, first run and new titles, in addition to what happens in the bar. You know, I mean, here at Sloan's Lake, we have a really cool opportunity in Barfly that's different than in Littleton, because you know, Glass Half Full, which is a cool taproom in Littleton, is a little bit smaller, and not as many opportunities for creating those kind of experiences that we do often. We're in Barfly at Sloan's Lake, you know, has a stage, the bar's bigger, so it just kind of adds to that experience.
But it still has this kind of a speakeasy kind of feel and makes it a really cool, intimate experience. But like you mentioned, we have a bar, and we actually had someone speaking earlier to kind of set the mood for us. But yeah, this is such a unique, you know, kind of experience that you're going to, and it maintains that feel of kind of an old school, you're going to the movies. This is a big event. This is something that, you know, you can really have fun and get into this different world. And I love that about Barfly. It's got so many room, so much room for activities, right?
So much room for activities. Honestly, I think just being on Colfax helps with that a lot too. I always say that Denver needs more Colfax in its life, and it's gotten a little too clean and soft around the edges here in Denver. And so I kind of you go down Colfax, and I'm constantly like twisting my neck and like probably running lights because there's so many still interesting shops down here. And I think you guys really add to that, even though it's a new build and like. It's beautiful in here. It still feels kind of Colfax-y, so that's a compliment.
Yeah.
Trust me.
Keeping Colfax a little weird and
yeah.
unique, right?
Yeah.
Now, you all do more than just show movies. You touched a little bit about some of the programming, but, you know, what I love also about Alamo is, you know, you all do sing-alongs, and you have movie and beer pairing dinners. You have speakers that come in, directors that actually walk people through. I know last week we had the Turn It Around screening of East Bay Punk. So tell us a little bit about some of that programming, and what do you all have coming up next?
Do you want to talk about a little bit about beer dinners?
Yeah, so the one that comes immediately to my mind, because it was so awesome and also just kind of stressful on our end. We had a Indiana Jones triple feature feast. It was 12 courses of food and drinks that all kind of paired with the Indiana Jones movies. And that's just one of the hundreds of dinners that we have done. So
did we have monkey brains involved?
I think we had a heart at least.
Yeah,
Temple of Doom.
Nice.
And flaming kebabs.
Oh, wow.
Jeez. That was interesting to execute.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like Brittany said, because there's so much opportunity here in Colorado, I mean, we've worked with so many people, and we could keep working with new people and not have to double back because there are so many breweries and so many awesome people doing cool things here that, like, I think it was not last year, but the year before, we actually did one a week in Littleton.
Wow.
And we started to kind of back off, and now we kind of, now we have Sloan's open, we kind of go back and forth. So they're still roughly happening every week, but we kind of go back and forth between Littleton and Sloan's Lake. So pretty much every Tuesday, if you are into eating and drinking a lot of really awesome food and drink, you can probably find a feast or a beer dinner or a wine dinner at either of our venues.
And then you'll also do some quote-alongs for popular movies, right?
Yeah, we just had a string of these really successful Labyrinth quote-alongs.
Nice.
Where obviously the classic, you know, David Bowie film, where there was like 10 different props, and you know, it's very interactive and it provides a different experience, and you still can't talk or text, you know, that's still really important. You know, it's a fun experience, but it's not something that you want to still, like, you know, it's not a joke, it's actually, you're kind of serious about the interactivity of it.
Yeah.
You can sing along. You know, we tell people that if you feel comfortable, you can get up and dance in your aisle if you want to. But yeah, we have those, and we just did a Moonrise Kingdom movie party with custom knives, like pocket knives.
Oh, wow.
Small ones, not dangerous ones.
Yeah.
Just creating those kind of small moments where it's like, I'm only going to get this cool, like, Moonrise Kingdom Alamo pocket knife at this Moonrise Kingdom
movie
party.
Making the movies
fun again. Exactly,
yeah. That's awesome.
While also just keeping it as a thing where it's like, you know, it's a place where, yeah, you can actually enjoy a movie and not have to be like shushing people the entire time.
Awesome. So for those who are wondering about some upcoming stuff, what should we be looking for? What's coming up next on the horizon?
I think, I don't know, we're doing a lot of stuff in Barfly. Wednesdays kind of seem to be like our flagship day, you could say. The first Wednesday of every month, we have a series called Ham on Rye, which is a poet series. If you come to Barfly, as you guys can see here, it's literary and kind of poet-themed. Local laureate Travis Sebula, he kind of curates that and brings in poets. Tattered Cover comes by, and they have copies of their books that they sell for the poets. So you hear them read, they do a Q&A, and then they select a screening afterwards. So they're curating that as well. The second Wednesday of every month is the Handsome Little Devils Devil's Workshop. If you're unfamiliar with them, they are a kind of like magic vaudeville group that's based in Denver. They're really cool, and I'm surprised that they haven't left Denver yet because they're like Cirque du Soleil level.
Really?
With some of their stuff. Yeah, it's a mixture of like, it's comedy, it's vaudeville, it's theater, it's magic. And they do like an hour show. They like tear this place apart. I mean, the first time they came and did a show here, the bar was covered in like confetti and glitter and toilet paper, and it was insane. And then the third Wednesday of every month is the Laugh Night on Earth, which is a Bukowski reference, but it's a curated comedy show. It's three stand-ups plus Zach Moss, who's the host, and he kind of curates that as well. It's not an open mic. It is a curated show that he brings in, you know, local talent. And we've only had three shows, but so far we've already had comics traveling from New York and L.A. who have been on the show. And plus the headliner of last month's show was just on Conan. So he's already bringing in like some really cool talent for these shows. And in addition to that, of course, we have Geeks Who Drink every Monday. We were starting a new series with Brett Saunders of KBCO. He's doing soundtrack trivia on Tuesdays. What else do we have going on? Some other stuff.
I feel like you just covered
We have live music on Fridays and Saturdays usually. And of course, we'll do kind of random one-off events. You know, we're doing a dog adoption event with Max Fund, the No Kill Shelter, on Friday.
Cool.
So just kind of...
lots of programming.
Yeah, we're just trying to keep a variety, keep it diverse, you know. Yeah. And again, we're just happy to have a space here at the theater that, you know, you can do these things in.
That's fantastic. Cool. Well, thank you all so much for coming on the show. We're really pumped to be broadcasting here at Alamo, and here in Barfly specifically. Like I mentioned, this is really the only place that I go see movies now, because it really is just the holistic experience. And I really love going to the movies and feeling like you're actually transported as a production. So yeah, this is really great. Thank you guys so much.
No, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Cool. Once again, that's Stephen Bissett and Brittany Matheny of Barfly here at the Alamo Draft House. We'll be back after this, the next break. Hang tight. This is The Porchcast on PorchDrinking.com. Whether you're planning to build out a larger beer cellar, shopping for a new home, or buying a new car, OnTap Credit Union provides the tools and services needed to help with any major life transition. Learn how OnTap Credit Union can help with home loans and streamlining financing for a new car. OnTap Credit Union also specializes in crafting banking solutions for you, the people who brew great beer, people who drink it, and the communities where they all reside and do business. Find out more at ontapcu.org. All right, folks, we often talk about First Draft Tap Room and Kitchen. They're the pour your own draft system located at 1309 26th Street here in Denver, Colorado. It's basically the adult version of Froyo. You can go in and try as much or as little as possible of up to 40 different styles of beer. It's your pour your own draft system, so you can pour a little bit or a lot. It's basically like going to a beer festival, but at a draft room location. They've also got fantastic food. So visit First Draft Tap Room and Kitchen, pour your own draft system located at 1309 26th Street here in Denver, Colorado. Once again, that's First Draft Tap Room and Kitchen. All right, we're back once again here broadcasting from Alamo Draft House's Barfly. This is The Porchcast. Be sure to subscribe to us on podcasts, on iTunes, and also whatever listening devices that you all use, whatever apps and crazy things. Subscribe to the Porchcast, and be sure to give us a good little rating if you like what you're listening to. We're going to get back into it with Dev Adams here, Miss Luplin. She is an advanced Cicerone, also a BJCP judge, and also runs her own website, Miss Luplin, and writes for Colorado Brewery List.
And earrings, too.
Oh, yeah.
And I make earrings and I consult for breweries. I do it all,
She
folks.
Does a little of everything. She's the modern beer representative. Really, you do a tremendous job of representing beer in Colorado, so we're thrilled to have you on the show.
You also do poetry events at the Alamo Draft House?
I actually am, funny enough, I am actually a published poet.
Excellent.
I have a book of poetry that, yeah. Several years ago, but yeah.
We're just going to do an entire show talking about all the things that you do now.
Might be able to just start with what she doesn't do first and shorten it up.
Skydive.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah. Don't do that.
It's a short list.
Well, we'll reserve that for episode 41, but we still have lots to get to here today because there's been a lot of news like we alluded to earlier. Let's start kind of with most recent. Earlier today, Six Point Brewery announced that they're hiring Trillium's brewer Eric Buckley as their chief product officer of their new R&D division. Dev, what do you think about that?
It's exciting. Makes me a little bit nervous. Six Point and Trillium, very different brands, very different beers. Hoping that Six Point doesn't become Trillium Light, but it just enhances the Six Point brand, brings some new flavor to it, some more fun to it, and I hope that Trillium is able to stay as awesome as Trillium is.
Jesse, you're from the Northeast. What's your take on some of this? Are you familiar with the Six Point brand? I know that you're pretty familiar with Trillium, I'm sure.
Yeah, I actually won like a Six Point art contest a couple years back. It was kind of fun.
No way.
That is awesome.
Oddly enough, though, it was like based on most votes. So I just had literally the girl I was just talking to, Kristen from Legal Pete's, get all the votes for me from behind the bar. So that was a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
So yeah, I'm familiar with both. I don't know. I think it's cute, and it's definitely a PR thing for them to bring this gentleman on board. Let's be honest. Like, he's one cog in a huge machine, so like I bet he's going to bring some fun stuff to the table. And you know, the Northeast for the longest time made, let's be honest, bad beer, and the IPAs of the East Coast were pretty malty and not really up to the standards of the growing craft beer palate. So now they're just so incredibly behind this hazy IPA trend that it's almost I don't know, a disservice to the industry, but we can talk about that another time. But I don't know. It's cute. It's great that they're bringing this guy on. It's still going to be a big company. Six Point's a massive entity. And he'll have some hand in it, but it'll still be Six Point. I don't know.
Do you feel like, you know, we talked about at CBC, you know, the big breweries are all kind of trying to grab some of that market share that's been lost in the past couple months. Do you think that this is a move that kind of signals their need to make a big shift?
Yeah, you got to stay present. You got to pivot. You got to be hip and cool. And this to me is like the ultimate, besides like buying a brewery to like, I don't know, it seems pretty, we got to stay cool.
Yeah.
But I've seen a lot of rebranding from them and kind of too constant. Like it's not the waiting 3 to 5 years to rebrand, but rebranding every year sort of thing. So I'm wondering if they feel like they don't have a strong enough identity and they're trying to find that, and maybe they're just throwing spaghetti at the wall at this point in time.
I feel like they are a branding company that also makes beer. That's what I've always kind of felt about them.
Green Flash, also another big brewery that's making some changes. They announced that they're going to be opening up a third location in Nebraska. They just, over a year ago, announced their Virginia location. And by the end of the year, they're going to be taking over a brewery that was in Lincoln, Nebraska, opening up their third location. What are your thoughts?
I mean, Nebraska is definitely a place that needs more craft beer. I've had some fantastic beer there. Farnham House sticks out in my mind as a great brewery there. But don't know. It's a pretty risky move, moving to Nebraska, where there's not a whole lot, even in Lincoln itself.
Sure.
Funny thing is, when I went to Green Flash in 2010, they didn't even have a tasting room. So to see 7 years later that they're expanding to a third location is pretty hilarious.
Jesse. See, this excites me. I like this. I think the Midwest, and I've said this before, and Sam and I high-five about it, the Midwest is the most underrated beer scene in the world. Like, all the states spanning from, like, Minnesota over to Michigan, all parts in between, there's so many awesome things happening there, and it doesn't have the sex appeal of the coast or, like, a big, cool, hip, up-and-coming cities like the Austin, Portland, Seattle, Denver's of the world. And I just think this is great. Like, this is so cool for Nebraska. I'm excited to see more places move into, I don't know, Illinois, Iowa, like places like that that could really use it. I think Michigan's always been a great state. Wisconsin's always been a great beer state. So to see this grow, and I think it's going to happen because you can only go into so many of these cool cities for so long before the square footage rate is just through the roof. And I'm guessing Lincoln was a little cheaper than Austin or Portland or San Fran.
So. You know, I was excited to ask you this question because as someone who, you know, I think it's been talked about for a long time, call to arms, looking for other locations, this is right up your alley.
It's right up our alley.
Yeah.
I mean, Denver has literally become, in the 4 years since we wrote the business plan, probably too expensive for us to ever, unless something changes or something pops up, some needle in the haystack, to ever open a second location here. And we have started looking out of state, and I think it's sad that like a local business has to consider moving out of state, but it's just kind of, maybe if we were like cranking and money was coming out of our ears, but I think there's going to be more and more places moving to these areas.
See, I personally think this is a brilliant move, and it's something that I kind of have anticipated for a while, but I'm kind of surprised that a little bit of the choice of Lincoln, Nebraska, and also that Green Flash was the first one to do this. You know, I think that if the AB entities, and you know, we criticize what they've, you know, with Tin Barrel and Golden Road setting up these satellite locations all across the U.S. I think in theory that concept is the right move if you're really trying to gobble up market share. But I think their execution is poor because they're trying to go into these markets that are very saturated already.
Totally.
Whereas they could totally set up shop in a Cincinnati or an Indianapolis or even a Chicago, places in the Midwest that are already very thirsty for beer, and really take advantage of, you mentioned cheaper rent, but also a fan base that is still kind of in their infancy and understanding beer and really getting into the beer scene, but are now starting to really rise as beer becomes popular. So it surprises me that more breweries aren't doing this. You know, Oscar Blues began, you know, with Austin and also now in North Carolina. But again, with North Carolina, it seems like everybody's going for that Asheville area. And then also now Virginia becomes the East Coast satellite location. Why aren't they looking at like a Nashville or like a Minneapolis or somewhere that it's still, you don't have a ton of really, you know, strongholds of major breweries that are taking over those areas?
Well, I think part of it is obviously laws. When you mentioned Chicago has some of the most unfriendly brewery laws in the country.
Sure,
but
good point.
When I look at, considering what you said about it being a little surprising that's Green Flash, I think if Green Flash was looking at, say, Omaha, it wouldn't be successful. Omaha is, in my opinion, an infinitely cooler city than Lincoln. I think it has a better scene in general. I think it's rife for more development, but it doesn't have the college like Lincoln does, and that's going to attract the hoppy beer drinkers, because folks who grew up in Nebraska don't necessarily have the palates yet for the super hoppy beers. When you drink the homegrown beers from Nebraska, which we did a lot this, well, we drove through last November, they're much more milder. There's a lot of farmhouse ales. They're leaning a lot towards Belgians and those really nice complex beers, just not the high hop West Coast style. And so to see them go to Lincoln makes sense in that they're attracting some drinkers who probably do have the, that kind of palate, looking for that big hop slam.
Really great point. Now, we've turned to another kind of acquisition of sorts. This time it's New Belgium, making a splash by acquiring Magnolia Brewing in San Francisco. Dev, you mentioned you were just out there recently. What is your take on this?
Magnolia Brewing, cool, cool brewery. We went to their original location. They have two locations in San Fran. We went to their original one. Totally fits with New Belgium's brand. It's hippie, it's funky, it's weird, it's totally off-kilter. Makes sense to me. New Belgium's going to start gobbling up some more of these smaller breweries the same way we've seen some of the more regional breweries do. Magnolia just, it fits their brand.
Jesse?
Yeah, this one was kind of funny to me because I forget who the heck I was talking to, but somebody ended up catching a like a Uber or a Lyft to DIA with Kim Jordan one time. And apparently in that conversation, she was said how she was interested in like opening a brewery in San Fran, because I think that she lives there part of the year or something. And I just, as soon as I saw this, I thought, like, this is their pet project that they want to do in San Fran. Like you mentioned, I don't know what they'll do, if they're going to gobble up any more places, or if this is just, like, their way to, like, be creative in San Fran. And I thought it was interesting that it was an Uber Seal is involved in this as well.
Yep.
And you're going to ship Lambic from Belgium to San Fran? Isn't there an easier city to do that in? I don't know. But anywho, I thought it was, it took me back to that story of my friend, a little anecdote my friend had told me, and it was really neat.
Yeah. You know, I think it's also really cool to see Dick Cantwell getting back in the game. He's going to be kind of leading kind of their experimental side of incorporating Magnolia, doing some fun, funky, weird stuff. And I'm sure with Boot Biersel involved, that's going to build kind of their Sour and Wild program. But Dev, like you mentioned, I was just out at Magnolia probably just 3-4 months ago. And that brew pub really is one that is kind of funky, has some history behind it. Really cool in that they're sticking to making very traditional styles. But with New Belgium, I think this is such an interesting move. They essentially rescued Magnolia from bankruptcy with this acquisition. You know, one thing that I thought was kind of weird and interesting, for a while I had heard that New Belgium was looking at a similar partnership with what Brooklyn did with 21st Amendment and Funkworks. I had heard Brooklyn Brewery and New Belgium tied together for a long time. So it's interesting that New Belgium finally steps into the game of teaming up with another brewery. I would assume that there's going to be more coming along the way, because for me personally, and we'll get into this in the next segment, but I don't see another brewery being able to acquire New Belgium at this point with just the cost associated with a brewery of that size. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see where their next move is.
I mean, if Coors had bought us, we would have acquired New Belgium in a heartbeat. They're great people. And then I don't know if you tried it, but their Aggie beer is absolutely phenomenal.
That's fantastic, yeah.
Love that beer.
Now,
watch out, Kim.
Along that acquisition topic, Funky Buddha is the second brewery acquired by Constellation, joining Ballast Point. What do you all make of that move, Jesse? I'll start with you this time.
I was interested at their barrelage levels. They seemed a little lower than I think you usually see in these kind of acquisitions. I think they're, what, like 25 to 30 or something like that?
Well, usually that actually fits the mold of what AB typically does. And I know, you know, if you're listening to the beer circles, Funky Buddha was a name that had been kind of shopped around,
right,
of being shopped around in the industry. And for a while there, I had heard that Funky Buddha was potentially being acquired by Anheuser-Busch. Don't want to throw out any wrong info there, but, you know, people talk.
Totally.
And so, you know, that 25...
I thought it was usually like 40 to 60, huh?
You know, it ranges from that early 20s to mid-60s level. So
yeah,
I think it is kind of interesting. Definitely a different size than the Ballast Point acquisition, but you know, one that I think from, if you're looking at Constellation, it's very clear they're going West Coast, East Coast, and what are they going to do in the middle next? So,
in 7 years in business?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah, CTA, 5 more years, baby. No, that's it's. I don't, you know, they didn't release any details from the agreement, did they?
And, no.
Yeah.
Not the $1 billion broadcast that they had for Ballast Point.
Yeah, I don't know. It's Funky Buddha, man. Florida is so desperate for good breweries, and they've been fighting so hard, the big guys, for so long. I was delighted to hear that the acquisition wasn't AB InBev, mm-hmm. just because they have absolutely brutalized small craft breweries in Florida.
Sure.
Disappointed a little bit. I'm disappointed whenever there's an acquisition like that. Glad it's Constellation as opposed to AB InBev.
Sure.
So.
And then what happens when Dale's and Oscar Blue sells, you know, and that whole thing goes under, then Scar City will be ABI too. We'll see how that goes.
We're not confirming any of this. This is all just
this is Jesse Brookstein.
Wild speculation.
Jesse Brookstein. Sam, I want to get your take real quick. You know, we talked about shorts the last episode. I think Funky Buddha is kind of a fun kind of iteration of what Shorts does, because Shorts for the longest time pioneered some of those weird dessert flavors. Yeah. Funky Buddha does a lot of the same. What was your take on this acquisition?
At first I thought, hey, that's kind of fun, because my parents were there recently down in South Florida since they're retired in Snowbird. And then since I've never really had it before and I'm not really familiar with them, it just kind of flew around my radar, and I thought, oh good, well, Constellation has another brand to add to their way too fucking expensive for me to buy start or whatever arm they're starting here. So that was my main take.
Cool. All right.
Cool.
The Eclipse is kind of the big thing that has dominated this past week. Did you guys all take a look at the Eclipse?
Oh yeah.
Sure.
There was
did.
An Eclipse?
There's an Eclipse, yeah.
I viewed it how our president viewed it, with bare eyes.
Really?
Yeah.
Sam just smart. Goes in typical Sam fashion, zero F's given. Just
yeah.
Taken,
well,
just...
I made like a pinhole box out of a shoebox.
Sure.
So like I tried to do something somewhat scientific, and about halfway into it, I realized it wasn't working. And so I had some sunglasses on. There was some shading in our office building, so I kind of tried to take a peek real quick just to see how bad it was, and it still just blasted my eyeballs.
Yeah.
But the retina burn that I got, I could see the shape of the crescent. So.
No wonder the setup for today's podcast was all over the place.
Yeah,
saw pieces over at the front of the building, and then a mic on the back of the building.
You started so crafty with your box and then just stared at this.
Yeah, thing. Just said, well, this is dumb.
Yeah.
Science sucks. I'm give up.
Who needs it?
Well, I'm sure by this point everybody's eclipsed out, but I want to bring up that the next eclipse will be happening in 2024. And so I want to take a look forward, and see 8 years from now, what will the craft beer scene look like at that point? I've got a few questions. We're going to do this very kind of rapid fire mode, go around and kind of predict what craft beer is going to look like in 8 years. We'll start with Jesse. We'll go around Sam, Dev. Will the U.S. have more or less than 7,000 breweries in operation? Jesse, what do you got?
Yes, I wouldn't be surprised if we hit 10,000 here in 10 years.
Really?
Sure. I would not be surprised.
Sam?
I am inclined to agree with that, just the way that it's been going. I mean, they're probably going to be smaller, like local breweries, but I think we'll have a boatload of them.
Dev, you in agreement?
I agree. I think we're going to see the revival of the true neighborhood brewery. We're going to see all those little towns that don't have one now have one.
Cool. Will GABF still be as big as it is in eight years from now? Start with Dev.
I actually think it's going to split. I think we're going to have four regional GABFs or something like that. And then for competition purposes, lets more people attend. And then we're going to have the big one here in Denver. All that competition filters up.
Oh, wow. Cool. Sam?
In 7 years, I kind of thought it might be hitting kind of a peak right now. I'm sure it'll still be bigger in terms of breweries. But unless it starts moving around, I don't know how much more space does the Colorado Convention Center really have, too? I mean, I think they got a few more halls to open up, so that's going to be really the limit.
Totally.
I think the BA, it gets a lot of criticism for GABF and this and the other thing. I think they do an excellent job, and I think they've maintained and kept the growth within reason. I like the idea of multiples around the country. I have no idea what they have planned for the future, because I feel like even when they opened up more space last year, like the Meet the Brewers, a lot of people didn't go into that space. I was shocked. I'm like, you all want to meet the Brewers. Here they are. You're not going in there. And then there was a lot of space for like Stanley coffee mugs. Like, so I feel like there's room in there. There's not sponsored room. So I don't know. We'll see.
Throwing a curveball in here. 8 years from now, will New Belgium... And also, will Sam Adams still be independently or employee-owned?
I don't know what the heck's going on with Sam Adams. You know, I can't answer. I think New Belgium. Let's say Kim leaves. She's just chilling, kicking up her feet at Magnolia, and then they get her money gets pulled out of the company, and then they get bought.
Sam,
I think they'll stay true to the employee ownership. And as far as Boston Beer Co. goes, I have no idea either. That's anyone's guess.
Deb, what do you think?
I think Boston Beer Company is going to stay independent, but I think they're going to gobble up some other brands, maybe even New
Belgium.
You think
they're going to enter the game? Yeah. Oh, you're predicting Sam Adams will buy New Belgium?
Possibly.
All right.
Wow.
Cool. Will AB InBev own more or less than 20 breweries in its high-end division at that point?
Oh, more.
More? Yeah?
Yeah, just flat out more.
Probably, yeah. I'll go with that.
I'll say more. They'll probably gobble up some people we don't know about and some people we do know about.
Will another brewery conglomerate emerge with more than 10 breweries in its coalition by 2024?
Sure.
Yeah?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, I think so for sure.
What about will Oscar Blues or another brewery plant satellite locations in more than 5 locations across the country by that point?
Oh, I think if not Oscar Blues, for sure another brewery will. I think we're going to see more of those satellites of those smaller breweries. I mean, even look at Fatheads out of Ohio. They have 3 locations, so.
Yeah, I think that's going to be kind of the next divide and conquer, spread out move.
As we've found out, it's a lot easier said than done, thanks to the state, city, and federal regulations. So I would like to think that people will open more and more multiple locations, but I think it'll just come down to how they can slip it by the law.
Sure. And then the big one, will craft beer own a 20% market share of the beer market by 8 years from now? I know that's been kind
Hello,
of a
everybody.
Big mission.
Good evening. My name is Brett Saunders
from
KBCO FM 97.3 FM.
I'm going to go with no. I'm going to say 19.5%.
But we're going to try something
sassy.
Tonight.
And then the last question for you guys. Will the Brewers Association still exist in its current form in 2024?
What do you mean by current form?
As it is now. Structure-wise.
I think so. Yeah? I think they've been there for many, many years. They just got that baller ass location in Boulder, so yeah, they're probably okay. I mean, Gatz's mullets lived for 20 years. How is the BA ever gonna go away?
That mullet alone will be able to hold together the BA. Sam, your thoughts?
I think they'll be there, but I think there might be another kind of like with the Colorado split off. There might be some other groups that are somehow, some way getting in the mix there too.
Deb?
Yeah, I think with the rollout of the independent craft label and all that push, I think they're here to stay.
Okay, cool. Fantastic. Well, I got here. Okay. I'm going to edit that last part out, but
yes.
Sorry, Brett Saunders threw me for a curveball there. All right. Well, thank you so much. I think that's pretty much all we've got for episode 40 of the Porchcast. Thanks once again to Deb Adams for joining us for this edition.
Thanks for having me on.
It's really cool to hear your story. Jesse, as
big
always,
4-0.
Big 4-0. We're over the hill. Look at that.
I know, for real.
Sam, thanks again for keeping our levels straight and great to hear from you.
Level up.
All right. Well, thanks again for listening to the Porchcast. Be sure to follow us on iTunes and Stitcher and whatever listening devices that you're using. Or also be sure to tweet at us at PorchDrinkingCO. Hit us up with any questions you might have for the next episode. We'll catch you guys next time. This has been episode 40 of the Porchcast. Check you